Dear future, I'm ready to be wholehearted in what I can do now to create a better future for my daughters and truly support 1.69 million people in the design economy in the UK to design for planet.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready, a podcast brought to you from Amsterdam by Digital Society School and Transformational Studio. Your hosts for today are Carola Vashaw and Marco van Hout.
Minnie Moore is the Chief Executive of Design Council. She was previously Chief Executive of Gerald Retail in Norwich. Her other roles have included Joint Chief Executive of the East England Co-op, Executive Director of Marketing at Nodcuts Garden Centres, Global Marketing Director of leading innovation company Votif, and Managing Partner of advertising agency HHCL. Minnie was voted Vistage Business Leader of the Year in 2020 and listed as one of the 100 most inspirational women in Suffolk and Norfolk in 2018. She was appointed by His Royal Highness Prince Charles in 2016 as his Ambassador for Responsible Business in the East of England as part of Business in the Community. Minnie has been a board member of two business improvement districts and a town deals board. She is currently an ambassador for the charity Fresh Start, New Beginnings. Hello, Minnie. We're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you. Really, really pleased to be here.
Hi, Minnie. Nice to meet you and thank you for being on the show. As you know, 21 for 21 is a podcast about transformation. We told you that. And we live in transformational times and we see that systems are really crumbling and we need to rethink the way we look at society and at the symptoms that are becoming more and more visible. Just look at climate change, the global pandemic, and for example, the related social and economic exclusion. The list goes on and on, really. So Charles Eisenstein, an American philosopher and author, argues that these symptoms, they rest on the top of systems. And in turn, systems rest on top of stories. And this is exactly what we want. We want to unravel these stories, and therefore we are talking to 21 transformational leaders, people who are ahead of the curve and to whom we can ask what the view's like from their perspective. So really to inspire us in our transformational journeys. So today we will talk with you, Minnie, about the role of design, creativity and innovation, and also about the role of business as a force for transformation. And we would love to hear how you see things evolving and emerging in these really chaotic and pandemic times, Minnie.
Well, so let me first of all just pick up on that sense of a transformation and what I think is really a seismic shift that we're in the middle of at the moment. And around climate, you know, the language, emergency, crisis, they really are. You know, it really is. I don't think that's kind of excessive language. And on the systems point, it does feel right now that we are seeing a breakdown of economic systems, environmental systems, societal systems, and then, you know, the COVID pandemic, the impact that something invisible could have on our world and on our daily lives. Just extraordinary and global. And global, what a thing that we have just lived through that hasn't been national, truly globally, all experiencing something at the same time. And boy, does that make tangible the sense of one planet, one world, one people. For me, is then in my role at Design Council, of course, that's a very specific lens for me. So I started in my role at Design Council on the 1st of March this year, so just over 6 months in. And when I landed in the business, we were very much, as the UK's national strategic body advisors on design, sustainability was one of the things that we were looking at. There were three parts of our strategy. And after not very much time in the role and seeing even more clearly the impact of the climate crisis, I just felt we need to actually make this our core focus. We need to make it our core focus. So as of a couple of weeks ago, the Design Council has announced our new mission, which is Design for Planet. And just to expand on what I mean by that, it is picking up on the point that design shapes our world. Every single thing that is designed going forward from today will make things better or worse, or perhaps neutral. And so design has a critical role to play in meeting net zero and beyond. So with Design for Planet, what we are hoping to do is support and galvanize the 1.69 million people in the design sector in the UK. And of course, we aspire to have a ripple internationally wherever we can. And it's really to get designers, whether they're architects, industrial, graphic, system, service, to put planet front and center in their work. And a designer said to us, actually, I love that language, because by calling it Design for Planet, you're making planet the client. So I keep talking about, you know, every brief that a designer gets, imagine planets at the table. What would a planet say? How is this going to work for planet? In that spirit of transformation, I obviously have a lens as Chief Executive Design Council. What role can design play in the transformation we have to make happen if we're to hit net zero and if we're ultimately to save our planet so that the human race can live on it?
That's fabulous, Minnie. Thanks so much for sharing that. As a designer, it certainly speaks to my heart, because I think that we're understanding, we always have understood that this is a world that we have designed and in which we have a huge impact as humans. But it seems that we're finally, through this renewed mission, also understanding the impact and the sort of the more holistic integrated role of design in really shaping our world. And it sounds really also like a mindset shift, a change in not only how we do things, but how through which lens we view the world. And quite recently at the Design Council, you've actually reviewed the your look at the double diamond of design by actually immersing it in the cultural and the people aspect, and now even beyond that, the planet aspect of the role that design has to play. Which, of course, being practical beings, brings us to where does one start? So it's super inspirational to think, okay, we're designing for the planet. The planet is now sitting at the table and essentially holding us accountable for the impact of the choices that we make as we design. Where does one start?
Well, before we took the final decision to make this really our core focus going forward, we did speak to as many designers as we could. And one of the things we heard was that many practicing designers are really struggling to keep up with the information and knowledge to help them make the right decision. So materials, for example. So you may be a product designer, you want to make the right decisions, but 1 week bamboo is good, and then sometime later it might be that no, maybe bamboo isn't a good choice because. And so there is it's so complex, because it's not just about the material itself, it's about how the material is produced, how the material is transported. You know, you get into really circular economy and issues and life cycle analysis. So, and there's another really interesting thing that came out, which is that the built environment designers and sector has continual professional development, you know, including planning. But actually, other parts of design do not have any continual professional development. So many designers are in small businesses where they just don't have anyone whose job it is to keep abreast of materials, information, etc., or to truly think about life cycle analysis and circular design. So one of the key things that Design Council aspires to do is really be a knowledge and skills hub. Obviously, we're not for profit, we're a charity. In a way, we're making that information free to any designers to access, and what works, to be able to share what works and best practice, to really, really help accelerate designers' ability to design for planet.
I think that's super important. And I want to underline the fact that you include the skill and the knowledge. And well, ourselves, Digital Site School, as an educational hub, where we also come together and focus on, you know, building new futures with design, technology, and social innovation. I'm curious to know what for you the role of education is, and specifically design education, since there is this new initiative where they really want to change design education. What would your dream be for the future of design education? What do you think needs to change?
Yeah, so in the UK, over the last 10 years, design technology as an option in secondary level education has declined by about 50%. That is, design technology being taken out of the curriculum to put in more of other things, more science and so on. So that is really bad news in the UK. We really need to stop that. It's gone down by 50%. And one of the key things there, I feel, is not only is design technology about getting your hands dirty, it's about making, it's also one of those subjects in school that's not necessarily about how academic you are. It's often for those young people who think differently, who see the world differently, and gets them really into creative problem solving. So I think that's a real missing for us in the UK. So we need to get that kind of back. We've got some excellent further education where there is sustainability built in as well. We have got some really, really good design there. But I think one of the key things we need to do is bridge between further education and business. So in the UK, we're talking a lot at the moment about green jobs. All the politicians are talking about green jobs. It's all going to be fantastic. There's lots of opportunity. We need to really bridge between business and education. What are the green jobs? What skills do they need? And how we inspire and excite young people around those, so that we're, you know, so it's really sort of seamless and connected between education and the skills that are actually required.
Obviously, there's a huge transformative aspect to that as well, in the sense that it's not just kind of delivering what business needs, but it's also helping shape the way business is done in the future. That I think that's one of the big assets that we bring to the table as designers, because we do have a bias to action, regardless of the discipline within design from which we come from. I was quite inspired by what you said before. I refer to that as the quest for questions, meaning when you start a design endeavor, think about what is the question you will have at the end of the journey, and what will happen next. Once you've gotten there, what is the next thing that you're going to ask? And I think that listening to what you've just said, as the Design Council and as a designer community, we have a responsibility to bring those questions to the business table, because it is possible that we're just looking at green as a shade of a color instead of a very integral way of approaching sustainability. How do you go about that dialogue with business, which I can imagine is something that every designer at a table with a client is a conversation that we're all having? How do you push kind of the forward thinking beyond, because that's what transformation is about. Trans is about going beyond, and yeah. Formation is about the current systems and structures. So how do we go beyond the systems and structures that we now have by asking new kinds of questions? How do we do that?
Yeah. So one thing just to say first off that I don't think I touched on when talking about Design for Planet, that is a really important point with business and government. And that is everyone is focused on carbon and net zero. That is not the simplicity of Design for Planet. The massive piece that we have to always think about at the same time is nature and biodiversity. Because if we hit net zero targets, but we haven't got any bees, we're in trouble. So there's a really important point about this holistic sense of sustainability and the planet and planetary needs. And so again, it's another one of those important points about skills. You know, there's a whole load of skills we require in understanding nature and you know, green and blue architecture and so on and so on and so on. So that is a point I wanted to make. In terms of with business, a lot of businesses are still not using design. A lot of businesses still don't really understand the importance of design. A lot of technical and scientific organizations do not understand the importance of design and may have brilliant technology, but do not have the intersection with design as to how that looks, feels, works for human beings and is human-centered so that humans find these things attractive, usable, affordable, you know, and want to use them. So there's still so much work to do with businesses to actually even understand the importance of design. Then there is the piece, Carola, I think, about design thinking. And wow, the difference that design thinking could make to organizations. That's such a much more sort of systemic thinking about the organization, its purpose, how is it designed to deliver its purpose, getting in, or, you know, cultural stuff as well that's there about serving their purpose. So we're a long way to go, I believe, currently in getting businesses to understand the power of design thinking.
Absolutely. And for me personally, I'm on a personal mission to really help democratize those skills, because I remember some time ago in the context of business, the CEO of a large company said to me, "What happens if we show them this and they do it the wrong way?" I thought that was a fairly typical question, right? Because we can be very elitist and say, well, design skills and design thinking are not transferable because if you do it wrong, you might get it wrong. I tend to think that every step we take in daring to ask new questions, experimenting responsibly with new ways of doing things and opening up the conversation, opening up the process of how do we make sure that what we do is sustainable, is integrating all of the stakeholders, all of the possibilities, every step we take in opening up that conversation is a step in the right direction. And we also have to have the humility to know that, you know, we're bringing one possibility to the table, but it has to be about engaging in a continuous conversation about how to do that. And bringing, as you said early on in this podcast, bringing the things that seem to be invisible back into the domain of the visible so that we can decide together what to do about them.
Yeah, I know there's a phrase that you use, which is the, you know, if you can dream it, you can do it. And one of the questions in the notes about working on this with you was about what do we really need for transformation? The two words for me that I'm always going to say first, vision and leadership. And the vision has to be, wherever it comes from, has to then be shared. You know, one person in a room with a vision is not going to succeed in the way that a group of people with shared vision, that are, wherever it came from, they then share that vision. Absolutely critical. And the point about leadership doesn't necessarily come from the person who's got leadership in their title. Leadership doesn't necessarily come from the chief exec. You know, I see my role as having to make sure there is clear vision and I'm clear on the things where I do need to lead. But then when things really work, it's when everyone feels skin in the game and ownership, and leadership is coming from people throughout the team, throughout the organization.
Yeah. I love how you just mentioned the fact that sharing is actually one of the vital parts in making design thinking or design methodology, the integration of it, successful. So we are one of the founders of the Global Goals Jam, a large initiative with the United Nations Development Program. Each year we have 2 or 3 days in Global Goals Week to design for the Sustainable Development Goals. And I remember when we founded it 5 years ago, our focus was very much on the methodology, very much about, okay, so if everyone will use the same methods, they will understand each other better and they can design from their own context for global impact. And the more we organized it, the better we understood that it was not about this, but it was about that shared vision, about that shared mindset. So I think that's really inspiring. And I always say that there are 4 roadblocks why we are not really making impact on those sustainable development goals. And well, one of those is indeed sharing and the lack of activism behind it, I think. And there's also, I think, in the design field, a lack of transparency, even though we always think that we are super open and a nice field, or all friendly people and that like to share. But there's no real platform where people can really share the process and the thinking behind their decisions. And another one is, I think because of that, we are really bad at co-creating. So indeed, we think that we co-create because we have a lot of post-its on the wall, but real co-discovery, real co-creation happens only between 4 walls often. And then the last one is there's a lack of diversity, I think, in the design field. And I would love to hear your thoughts on at least what diversity and perhaps the lack of this co-discovery in the design field. How do you see that?
Yeah, so the diversity piece, first of all, Design Council, one of the big research pieces that we do every sort of round about 3 years is a piece that's called Design Economy. And actually this year we've just launched Design Economy 21. And delighted to say that it is not just looking at and measuring the economic contribution of the design sector in the UK. It is also, for the first time, going to look at the environmental and societal impact as well. What we do know from previous design economy reviews is evidence on the lack of diversity. Lack of diversity in terms of, you know, race, colour, age. There's a geographic issue in the UK, which it's fairly southern based. And, you know, why is that? Because I think any designer I speak to would say good design is inclusive design.
Right.
And the wider, the more diversity you have in the team that's doing it, the wider your peripheral vision. And the more tuned in you are into sort of issues of inclusivity. So I don't have the answers as to why there's not more in design, more diversity in design agencies, design teams. We'll find out more. I suspect it's the exact same reasons why there's not enough diversity in many businesses.
That's probably then one of the main values that you see behind the vision to design for the planet. You talked about biodiversity, but actually we lack it in the design field itself.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things about design for planet and about all of our efforts on the climate crisis, you know, many people quite rightly are talking, this has to be a fair and just transition. You know, the fact that, and I think the UK probably the first, you know, sort of first and earliest transition to industrial production, and you know, the impact, you know, the industrial nations have had on the climate, and we're now expecting a whole load of change from those people who have actually not contributed so much to the problem. And there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen there politically about how we support them to transition. But there are already people that are being more impacted by the climate crisis because of floods, because of food poverty and so on. So we, within the climate crisis challenge, we really have to think about diversity and fairness. And as designers, we have to think about that. And we do have to think about how we get more diversity in our numbers, in our design community.
Yes, I appreciate that. I think it's very true. I think also we need to be quite generous with ourselves as designers, because we also are the product of the society and the context that we live in. And obviously, we have a calling as designers to try and make change happen and make things. But it's also true that in terms of career choices, your first survival instinct is not probably to go into a career in design. So it's a contextual problem as well. Going back to, if you can dream it, you can do it. If you can't even fathom that it's bloody possible, how are you even going to choose it, right? So yes, part of our role as designers, and I think that is the absolute beauty of the current context, obviously running Transformational Studio, I am in love with the word transformation, but I really think that we are in transformational times and that this calls for designers to step forward and say, well, if there's a challenge, here are possible ways to tackle it, because this is our strength. Our strength is, if there's a challenge there, we want to address it, we want to unpack it, we want to look for better ways to do things, to make things, in Herbert Simon's words, to turn existing conditions into preferable ones. And we have the tools in order to do that. We have lacked as a design community sometimes in finding the language that we need in order to express things. But I think that this is a time where we can reinvent that by embracing diversity, embracing fairness, embracing those challenges, and trying to pioneer the way in which we tackle those. Not from, oh, we have the only right answer, absolutely not, but much indeed in a designerly way of saying we can help bring about the options so that together we can, having that vision, that ability to dream, then bring in the leadership that, as you beautifully said, is part of the multiple talents that are in any group of humans, and help bring it about and help it manifest through those multiple perspectives that we share. But it does take time. Probably we are in a time in which it is the circumstances, as dire as they are probably ideal for us to start having the real conversation, the conversation that was invisible as we were getting on with life and business as usual. And now is the time to come to terms to that. And we can help bring the frameworks for that. If there were an ideal pathway as to, okay, let's, how do you build Rome in one day? Well, you can't. So obviously we need to take steps to start building and rebuilding and redesigning the future in which we're all going to be working together. How do we start, and in which order would we ideally do that? We've talked about education. We've talked about the role of design in business. We've talked about people coming into the discipline of design. What would be the things that we need to really activate, and what would be your ideal order to do that?
Can I pick up on something you said sort of halfway through that?
Of course.
First, and this is just something I happen to have a placeholder in the book, The Fantastic Donut Economics, by the brilliant economist Kate Raworth, who I have to say, had a meeting with her recently, and we were talking about design for planet. And at the end of the conversation, she said, for designers, you know, if you're not designing for planet, what planet are you on? Which I thought, thanks, Kate, I'm going to be using that everywhere, which I have been. My book happened to have this page open. We are the first generation to know that we're undermining the ability of the Earth system to support human development, says Johan Rockström. This is a profound new insight, and it's potentially very, very scary. It is also an enormous privilege, because it means that we're the first generation to know that we now need to navigate a transformation to a globally sustainable future. And I think that speaks, Carola, to what you were just talking about I think now is there have been other moments for design, but now is design's time. Because it is unequivocally going to be critical for us moving forward, because design shapes the world. And I've even seen that myself already in Design Council. From the moment we decided to take this very focused mission of design for planet, it has changed the nature of the conversations that I'm having with people, whether that's government, business leaders, other key stakeholders, because it just changes it, because I'm going to straight into something that is so important, and people very quickly see that design has an important role. So I think, you know, never waste a good crisis. It really is a time for design to have a much, to get a much wider understanding across all sectors of the importance of design. So there's an opportunity for us. And because design is so powerful, with power comes responsibility. And to that point about designers having a responsibility to put planet front and center.
Yeah. And I think in giving this answer, you've related back to kind of the pathway, or what are the steps in this process. Because as said, we are also immersed in the context. So design shapes the world in the context of an industrial and materialistic paradigm means a very different thing than what it means nowadays. So we are now indeed, through the choice of really designing for planet, we are shaping the world in the most literal sense of the word, moving away from only the artifact-based view of design, really to understand it as a mindset and as an approach in which what we start to design goes beyond the material domain and much more into understanding the influence we have in systems and structures and how we organize the world in the broadest sense of the word. So it seems that there's a logic to that as well, that through the things that we do, we start understanding the impact we have on the broader ecosystem, to relate to Kate Raworth, that the limits of the donut are, of course, society and sustainability. So what is good for us and what is best for the planet? And once we start understanding that within it, the kind of the pathway almost opens before us, saying this is where we have to bring these design skills and this design mindset into play, really, and to interconnect with what is possible. So lovely. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I tap into that as well? I think the nice thing is that we are absolute fans of Kate Raworth. So we work with her. She's a professor of practice at our university, the University of Applied Sciences in Amsterdam. And we actually work with her on making the donut more actionable and more practically applicable. And it's exciting because, like you just already showed in quoting her, she's thinks like a designer. So Kate is really inspiring in that sense, where she came up with the donut as a visualization. I think designers and people who think like designers are very important in making this very tangible. Design for Planet has to become a tangible concept so that we can really work on that.
Yes, and you've said it brilliantly at the beginning of the podcast, saying that, you know, perhaps one of the nice, if there are any, and whether nice is the right word, but one of the corollaries of the pandemic is that we've seen that we're in this together. We're one planet, we're one people, and the problems affect us all sooner or later. So the sooner we get together and bring in those perspectives to try and, you know, address those problems, the better. So we haven't said that we have any answers to any of this. So that's never been our promise to our audience. Because as you say, it's complex, it's difficult, there's a lot going on. But what we do always hope for is that we help bring about new questions in people, questions that will engage them in trying to make meaningful change and really put their sights on the future, which is coming at us at high speed. And as you know, the title of this podcast series is Dear Future, I'm Ready. So we'd love to hear from you what the way would be in which you would complete the sentence, Dear Future, I am ready, and tell us what you are most ready for, Minnie.
I would actually say, dear future, I'm ready to be wholehearted in what I can do now to create a better future for my daughters and truly support 1.69 million people in the design economy in the UK to design for planet. We have to make it real and we have to make it tangible. You might think you might not be here in 2050, certain people, but you know, that is not justification for thinking in terms of the legacy that you leave, that it's okay to not address this crisis now.
And so for me, the link between both things you said is the first being really about feeling, which is really the sensorial aptitude of this era, is we can feel with our hearts, we can sense something is wrong. And the second part is about taking responsibility and truly wholeheartedly participating in making a difference. And so it's really connecting those two things. And both Marco and myself have children, and we most certainly feel ourselves reflected in what you said, which resonates very, very much, because children have this way of holding a mirror in front of us and confronting us with the fact that we have to feel that, because when you start feeling the world, you start realizing that all of those things that seem far away and foreign are actually part of the planet and part of the place where we all live in. Mm-hmm. And the second part, in our roles as educators and designers and consultants, it's really about how do we help turn that into meaningful, positive change that gives us a sense that we are doing what's right. So lovely vision of the future, very inspiring. It's been a wonderful to speak with you, to hear your views. You've taken us through a broader vision of the planet, a different way of looking at business and organizations, and a new way of understanding our role as designers. We're excited about what the wonderful future you've shown us is going to bring. So thank you so much, Minnie. It's been an absolute delight.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Minnie.
Thank you. There is one thing that I forgot to mention. Can I mention this and see if there's room for it or not?
Always room for more.
In fact, three things about COP26. The first one is that I, having just gone to both the Labour and Conservative Party conferences, to be there, to be putting the voice of design into those conferences, I was incredibly impressed by Alok Sharma, particularly impressed by a session, a very up close and personal session he ran with about kind of 10 young people in the space that I was in. And yeah, just how engaged he truly wants to be with young people. And because he has a 19-year-old daughter that is prodding him very hard. And again, back at that point about hearts and minds. The second thing is that Design Council are running a Design for Planet festival in support of COP26. We're doing that on the 9th and 10th of November in the V&A Dundee, inspiring, beautifully designed building. It's a two-day festival, some people there in person, but it's 2 days of online live streaming, some pre-recorded. And we just love everyone and anyone to join us for that. And to find out more and to register, you just need to check out designforplanet.org. And then the final thing we're really pleased about in terms of design being in the right place, we have a place in the blue zone at COP26. The blue zone is the high security, all of the world business leaders, very small number of organizations sort of allowed in there to have a voice. Design Council will be there.
Let that be a symbol for the responsibility and the power of design.
Yeah, indeed.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Minnie.
Dear Future.
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 Dear Future, I'm ready.
This is Dear Future, I'm ready.
Dear Future, I'm ready.